Interest rates are up and the market is tumultuous. And now more than ever, you need the best darn possible mortgage broker working on your behalf. That's Gabe Winslow, and you can reach him at 832-557-1095, or you can go to mortgagesbygabe.com. What makes Gabe so unique? Well, he's incredibly bright. He's a UT grad. He's got a law degree. He's been in the mortgage industry for over 20 years, and he is a true mortgage broker. What does that mean? It means he can shop for the best deal at over 80 different lenders and find you the terms that best suit you. Most mortgage guys you talk to won't reveal that they have exactly one size fits all for you and exactly one conduit to get your loan. If you are in these hyper-competitive markets and you're in these markets that have frankly gotten a lot less friendly to the consumer, you need the best possible person working on your behalf. That's Gabe Winslow. He has our full endorsement. You can reach him at 832-557-1095.
Are you worried that recent events have derailed your retirement plans? It certainly made us reassess all aspects of ours, and that's why we're proud to offer our listeners a chance to work with David McClellan, a fiduciary financial advisor from Forum Financial. David's practice specializes in financial life coaching and retirement planning, and right now he's offering free consultations for our listeners if you mention the podcast. As part of this consultation, David can help you understand your financial freedom number and what that means to you in assessing your future financial plans. If you want to build wealth, if you want to make optimal decisions within your financial life, David is someone you need to talk to. You can reach him at 312-933-8823. Once again, that's David McClellan at 312-933-8823. He's located in Austin, Texas, but he's got a nationwide clientele. Do yourself a favor and get some great financial advice for free and see if you might want to work with Mr. McClellan. I think you'll be happy with your phone call. We're back. Everyone gets a trophy. I'm Paul Wadlington, and I'm looking at Ian Boyd sitting on a recliner eating copious amounts of beef jerky that he stole at Big 12 Media Days. And Big 12 Media Days, when was that? How many weeks ago was that, Ian?
Well, a few weeks ago.
And you still have reserve beef jerky. How much did you take?
Took a couple of bags. Now, steal is a harsh word. They were giving them away for free.
Okay. Did you take more than your share?
I don't know how many you were supposed to take.
So you opted with all.
I took a second trip and I grabbed an additional bag.
Have you ever been kicked out of a Chinese buffet?
No, I've tried. There used to be this place in Pflugerville that I used to go to called the Walkaholic.
WOK.
Yeah, and I did my best, but I just wasn't. They had probably more fierce eaters there than myself that would pass through.
I got kicked out of a Chinese buffet when I lived off of Altorf in Austin. And I went in there with my buddies and a couple of UT football players that we were buddies with, that we'd played high school ball with. And we weren't raucous or out of control. We just sat there a long time and talked and then ate. And then when we felt slightly full, we'd stop and talk again. And then we'd go back and we realized we'd been there about 2.5 hours. And they just asked us nicely, like, could you please leave? And we left them a nice tip, even though we were in college. So
Nice.
yeah, sometimes you gotta make a statement. Sometimes you gotta tell your stomach who's in charge.
I took my boys to a local Chinese buffet here the other weekend and ate well. And then later that night, I contracted a stomach bug. And I am not eager to return to a Chinese buffet. It
Yeah, that'll do it. It's
wasn't because
kind
of
of
the buffet. It was just went through our family, but man.
it's just association. It's just association. We've been talking about China, the land of the rising sun. No, that's Japan. Never mind. Well, there is a sun, SUN, in the middle of the UT linebacker core, and his name is Jalen Ford.
I had no idea where you were going with this.
And around Jalen Ford is the rotation of all the other defensive planets. Is there a more important player on the Texas defense than Jalen Ford?
Probably not. I could make a case for Jaren Thompson.
No, you can't.
Well, yes, I can.
I mean, you can make a case, but I'll dismiss it.
Because it's two things, right? It's your ability at the position, and then it's whether or not anyone else in the roster can credibly play it.
And knowledge base.
Yeah. Jaren Thompson is field safety, I think maybe a little hard to replace. I think Catalan could do it, but he's like a bigger question mark than Jaren in terms of making it through the season. But so, yeah, I think Jalen is the right answer. He's the son.
Jalen is the son, and we all rotate around. It's his world. It's a heliocentric universe with Jalen Ford at the center. And let me tell you why we say that, aside from the reasons Ian mentioned. Last year, Jalen Ford had an amazing breakout, and I'm using a resource to give you his statistics. An amazing resource, Ian. I won't even mention its name, the Burnt Orange Bible, Thinking Texas Football. But Jalen Ford came into 2022, and I remember my bold assertion was that Jalen Ford would be pretty good and solid at linebacker, and we didn't need to worry about it as much as everyone was fretting. Turns out that I undersold him quite a bit with pretty good, because he was the Longhorn defensive MVP, first team all Big 12. He had 119 tackles that led the team, 10 tackles for loss. I believe that was second on the team to Jadae Barron. 2 sacks, 4 interceptions, which led the team. Seemingly all 4 of those interceptions came at some important, opportune moment. 3 forced fumbles. And 2 recovered fumbles. He was responsible single-handedly for 7 of the defense's 14 total turnovers forced. Props to Jalen Ford. Shame on you, other 10 defensive starters.
Yeah.
You averaged 0.7 turnovers created per game. He averaged more. I couldn't do the math there quickly. He was responsible for half, Ian.
Wouldn't it also be 0.7?
Yeah, but I was trying to do it in relationship, and I realized halfway through I'd screwed up like the what I was trying to say, that he was 11xing the rest of the defense on an individual player basis, which I should have said, but I got too deep down my math hole, and I couldn't dig myself out. But thank you, Ian, for the lifeline. Ian's bemused right now. All right, Jalen Ford, we agree, is important. He's crucial. Is he the most?
There is a chance that they could be pretty decent if they had to recreate him with like Jet Bush and David Benda Don't Break.
Oh no! Is that the name you were gonna try on me?
That was it. Playing it.
Benda
playing,
Don't Break. I love that.
Playing in multiple roles.
I thought you were going to go Benda like Beckham.
Well, that doesn't make any sense, Paul.
Well, it's just a cool play on words, Ian. Also, sometimes Benda would just take off running in a direction irrespective of where the goalie was. But I think I don't want to do that recreation. How about that? How about we just keep Jalen Ford happy and healthy and he kicks ass? Does that sound good?
That'd be great.
All right. Is there anything we need to say about him? Look, he's a very good run stopper. He really grew as a pass defender. And I think I got to tip my hat, you did a good job documenting that growth over the course of the year. What's next for him? Or do we just need the same Jalen Ford?
I think he could actually grow quite a bit as a run defender, because he did a lot of what I like to call wait and see linebacker play. Like, I have Keandre Coburn and Tavondre Sweat ahead of me. I'm going to let them eat blocks. I'm going to sit here unmolested, see where this play is going, and then make a tackle for a 1 to 2 yard gain.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, I understand what they're trying to do. I recognize this blocking scheme. I'm going to get where they want to be. I'm going to go inflict a negative play, you know?
I love it. Firing on the play. I think that's where he could grow. Certainly tackles for loss. Getting more teams into second and 12, second and 13. And if he could grow his tackles for loss from 10 to 17, that would be a meaningful impact on game outcomes.
17 would be an amazing season.
Yeah, agreed. Why did he get 4 interceptions?
Well, he takes good pass drops. He moves backwards well. He positions himself well. Has eyes on the quarterback. Right? Honestly, I think it's just the quality of his drops is really good. He just gets back in a position to give himself a chance to make a play on the ball.
And unlike many linebackers, you know what he doesn't drop?
The ball when he catches
the ball it. When it hits him. In fact, he had one interception that was pretty darn good, if I recall. Like it was not an easy. Yeah, he's got legit hands. Interesting for a guy who didn't play any offense in high school.
Did he not?
I don't think so.
Was it?
I think
it was him and Hollaby were like in a similar class, maybe the same class. And I feel like one or both of them had some H-back snaps as well.
Well, I know Hollaby did.
Hollaby did for sure.
Yeah. I can look that up. While I'm doing that, tell us a little bit about David Break But Don't Benda.
I think he is potentially, well, I don't want to say he's as good a pass dropper as Ford, but I think he is very, very good at it. It's possible that he's better. It's hard to say that about a guy that we just described as snagging 4 interceptions and making a million timely plays. But Benda is very, very comfortable in zone coverage, finding the receivers, separating man from ball, getting good depth on his drops. They played him in 2021 in a third down package. They had a third down package they used a couple times in a couple games in 2021 where they would play Mo Blackwell and David Benda as the linebackers for the improved coverage. And Benda was very good at that. He's a pretty solid blitzer as well. He is also a wait-and-see run defender. But unlike Ford, he plays wait-and-see with a lot less length and mass. And so instead of like, I'm going to wait and see where the ball goes and limit it to a 1 to 2 yard gain like Ford would often do, I'm going to wait and see where this ball goes and hopefully make a tackle for a 3 to 5 yard gain. That's been Benda to this point. Setting aside also, he had some mistakes that he would make, reading false keys at times.
I would say wait and see was an improvement for him in 2022, because in 2021, he was hurry up blindly.
Yeah.
And just randomly take off in a direction that didn't even bear relationship to where the ball was going.
Really? I mostly just remember him on the play with Will Howard got behind the Texas defense and Sark was so disgusted that he removed some starters. And there were rumors about, there were some people that were like, are these guys point shaving? How in the world did they not?
Well, so I actually, if you go back to 2021, I documented in one of my postmortems, the Oklahoma State game where they rushed, Jaylen Warren rushed for like
that was
150 yards in the fourth quarter or something. And it wasn't, he broke a big run. It was 15, 20 yards at a time.
Yeah.
And a lot of it was on Benda, literally just taking off running in the wrong direction on an outside zone or an inside zone play. And it was bizarre. And he's addressed that sort of stuff. I don't see those egregious errors. I will have to say, I mean, in fairness, so we're not all rosy in these previews, I haven't heard anything about him in fall camp, positive or negative. And Sark has, for the first time since he's been here, been calling out more individual players proactively, not just responding to a media question. So typical media lazy nonsense. Sark, talk about Jatavion Sanders and how he's important to the offense. And then Sark is obligated to talk about Jatavion Sanders and why he's important, right? And sometimes they'll do it with a more marginal player. And you can tell the coach. You can tell the coach. Go ahead.
So what do you think they wanted to write about that day?
Right. And they already had their lead written. Yes.
Yeah.
Lazy. Lazy conventional media. But sometimes they'll ask about a more less talented player, a more modest player. And you could tell the coach doesn't want to blow it off, but they give more general sort of, well, you know, he's a guy and he tries hard and, you know, he's out there and he's a good contributor, whatever. Sark is bringing out guys proactively for the first time since he's been at Texas. I've not heard him mention David Benda positively or negatively. So does that mean he's a potentially solid player, or do we still think we can improve fairly dramatically at that position?
It's hard for me to think that the best outcome for Texas this year is not Benda don't break being just a really solid player. Like, the alternatives would be like Mo Blackwell emerges at that position, or skipping ahead to the, we could dwell on that, but skipping ahead to the one people want to talk about, Anthony Hill. I have heard Benda mentioned in fall camp as the dog that isn't barking, and the fact that Pete Kwiatkowski was like, we're going to give Anthony Hill looks at multiple positions and develop a package around his skill set, i.e. his blitzing. They don't seem remotely interested in trying to groom Anthony Hill to be the starting will linebacker this season. And I think if Benda don't break was a major disappointment, they would be zeroing in on trying to get Hill in place to replace him.
This is zeroing in Anthony Hill's number zero, and Ben, I'd see what you're trying to do, Ian, and it's not going to work. No one is going to accept this, Benda, but don't break. Watch, we're going to have jerseys with that monogrammed on the back. But let me ask you a little bit more broadly and expansively. Beyond the idea of, well, Anthony Hill is the Sam linebacker, so therefore he can only come in this situation, what do we care, or why do we care who flanks Hill? I'm sorry, who flanks Ford? Why don't we take Benda out and you put in Anthony Hill and he's blitzing and he's doing C-ball, chase ball? Why do we care?
I just think in the spread against spread offenses that's not a great idea.
Because what gets exposed specifically?
Spread teams will figure, they'll figure that out first of all. If he's like, oh, this guy can't actually make reads at his position, he just needs to be blitzing and attacking or else he's less effective. And then they will position receivers into his responsibility so that when he's not playing a conventional linebacker role, it's your defense is more distorted. And in trying to, you know, replace what he's supposed to be doing in like a base defense. And they will try to confuse him and they will just orient their, when they're spreading the field and spacing things out, looking for matchups in particular spaces, they will zero in on his area of responsibility.
What if, here's a hypothetical.
Yeah.
It's Friday night.
Yeah. Okay.
And David goes out on a real Benda.
No.
And he misses the game on Saturday. Who are we going to play in his role? Is it Blackwell? Or do we have to start thinking more expansively of getting even a freshman like Leona Lefau out there?
Or Jet Bush. I think it would depend on the opponent. But if it's like, hey, we need somebody that can reliably make run fits, then I think it's Blackwell or Bush.
Mm-hmm.
Blackwell, I would say just Bush, but Blackwell is, he's the smallest of the inside linebackers on the team, but he's most comfortable flying downhill, triggering hard and making plays against the run. He's stronger than his size would suggest. And he's not as comfortable in space or in coverage as you would think from a former safety, much like his predecessor, DeMarvion Overshown.
Yes.
So potentially him, but Bush is kind of ace in the hole.
Let's talk about Blackwell, because you're absolutely right in his desire for contact. The problem is he's smaller than some guys in our wide receiver room. I understand that there's a potential role for him, just triggering and attacking, but then you kind of lose the benefit of a Will linebacker. I mean, I would just go put in an extra corner or an extra safety, right? I mean, the problem I kind of have with Blackwell fundamentally is he's the size of a safety and he runs like a linebacker. Now, that's just his physical traits. I agree with you. He loves contact and he brings it, and that's valuable. But I wonder if he's a player that would get exposed pretty quickly against certain offenses.
What, like teams that can throw?
Yeah.
I think it's like Bush, or it's, you know, dime package that we probably have to save for another podcast.
We'll save for another podcast. Ian and I badly want to talk about this, but it'll never happen. So we're just going to mislead people for 30 minutes probably. So Blackwell. Oh, by the way, Benda, I'm going to ask you a quiz here. Do you know how many starts he's had in his career?
How many starts?
Yeah, total.
I believe zero. Three?
Three starts.
What?
Yep.
What games did he start?
Was
that coverage?
I think he's no. They don't. That's not a starter technically. No, I think it was in 2021. Maybe he got a couple, and then sometimes you're a technical starter because we open up in a certain defense. But yeah, he started three games over his career. I'd have to go check to see which ones.
Overshown got injured some in 2021.
Yeah.
So maybe Kansas State. I bet he started Kansas State. And boy, I don't know what else, though. Maybe that awful Kansas game that we are all trying to black out of our memories.
Oh, why'd you have to bring that up? All right, before we get to talk about wildly over-speculate about a true freshman, let's talk about a player that every time I mention, I did a preview with Texas Homer on the Texas defense. Those of you who haven't watched it, you should go check it out. Not because of me, because Homer does an awesome job of editing and cutting up and making just a great presentation. It's like a 30-minute hype film. It's a lot of fun to watch. But I brought up Jett Bush as a guy who, back at his natural position, his second year back at that natural position, played well in the spring game, and I described him as a capable player that is really underrated, I think, by a lot of Longhorn fans who remember him as an edge 2 years ago.
Strong side end.
Playing out of position.
Yeah.
And instead of viewing that as like, thanks for taking one for the team, people are like, oh, he stinks. Every time I bring him up, the YouTube comments are full of Jett Bush sucks. If he goes on the field, we're going to be terrible, blah, blah, blah. That's not the player that I saw in the spring game. And I think he's a capable player. Am I right? Am I wrong? Or I know you're a Jett Bush fan in general. I was probably less of him, a fan of him at edge, but he was also there out of necessity. So it didn't really matter whether I was a fan or not. He was there because he had to be.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on Jett?
He's a lot faster than you'd think. It's probably partly why they had him at edge, because he was actually a credible pass rusher at times. I think people probably remember like him getting steamrolled by Oklahoma, running counter over and over again. with like 330-pound linemen. It was just a bad setup. But yeah, he's decent in pass coverage. He's not great. He's decent there, though. He knows his job. He's pretty quick downhill. It's like many athletes in football. If they have to go backwards, may or may not be that great, but when they go forwards, they can be pretty good if they know where to go. That's Jet Bush to a T. Strong, well-versed in beating blocks. Does better when he can do so with a head of steam rather than when he's lined up right across the other guy that he has to beat the block from. I think they could probably start him, and I don't know that there's a game on the schedule this season where if they started Jet Bush, I would say they're going to lose this game. I think they have a chance to win every game on the schedule, even if they have to play Jet Bush, even if they have to play him in Jalen Ford's stead.
Yeah, I liked your quick downhill observation. I think that's right. That jibes with what I saw. In fact, if you go watch his high school tape, that's what he does in high school. And I actually watched it because I'd noticed that under Tom Herman, credit to Coach Herman, that he had improved considerably the quality of the preferred walk-on program at Texas. And Jet Bush is one of the products of that. Although this didn't happen under Herman, I think Taff was something of a product of that, because Herman made a concerted effort, first of all, to recruit these guys, to really go after them, but also to change how it felt on the team to be a walk-on, to make them sort of more part of the guys. And, you know, Bush has good high school tape. I hate to break it to y'all. If you go check it out, you're like, this guy could have obviously gotten multiple scholarship offers at lower levels of football, obviously. But, you know, I think there's a default reaction to him that's not correct, and it's dated. And it's not based on his current use or his current skill set.
Linebacker is very much a position where the 4'8 guy with a lot of even 4'9 guy with a lot of skill who knows where to be can be very effective. Like, what did James Laurinaitis run in the 40 out of Ohio State? 4.76 or something?
At best.
And he gave Texas all they wanted in 2008, even spread out and forced to cover like Quan Cosby and Jordan Shipley, because he just knew where to be and whatnot. Jeb Bush is not James Laurinaitis, but just those guys that are athletic enough and know what to do are really underrated as linebackers in the college game. Really at safety too.
Yeah, if you don't want to go far up to Ohio State, there's a homegrown example. Roderick McElroy.
Oof.
Very effective inside linebacker for Texas.
He was awesome.
And he would knock you the F out, which was awesome. In fact, he did in that Fiesta Bowl, to bring it back to the Ohio State.
Beanie Wells.
He knocked out Beanie Wells. I mean, literally knocked him out.
I was a student at the time when McElroy was linebacker at Texas, and we had a decent student seating group that I was a part of, and I started a chant for McElroy when he made plays. And we pulled off of the critically unacclaimed Spielberg hit Hook. We would chant and be like the Rufio chant, McElroy, McElroy, McElroy. And then the rest of the student section would either join in or look at us like, what in the world are you doing?
Yeah, I kind of know how I can relate to them right now. I kind of wish I'd just stopped at James Laurinaitis, but I had to try to one-up you, and now I'm getting punished. All right, let's talk about the guy. I'll be honest, Ian, at linebacker, I'm very much show me. because people talk about linebacking, and for the reasons you mentioned, knowledge and traits matter quite a bit. It's not just physicality. It's not just your 40. Anthony Hill was a guy that you see in high school, and the athleticism was obvious. It was glaringly obvious. But as with any spread-facing linebacker in the state of Texas, you're not really sure how it translates. You're not really sure about their violence of contact. You're not really sure about a lot of stuff. And then Anthony Hill shows up as an early enrollee, mind you, and plays in the spring game. And everything people said about him in practice, he more than delivered and showed in that spring game. Some guys just move different, Ian. Anthony Hill just moves different at 235 pounds as a true freshman. He defies blocking. And I know people want to say, well, boy, how does he defeat his block? How does he run through guys? Does he run around them? He just doesn't accept blocking. He just keeps moving, and he's strong enough that the blocker doesn't dissuade him that much. And he's quick enough where he just keeps his feet moving and the bigger guy can't handle him. Anthony Hill is going to make an impact on this defense. How big is the impact going to be? Is it going to be situational, like a young freshman, Harold Perkins, who took over some games for LSU, and then in other games, yeah, kind of a non-factor, to be honest? Or is this going to be a guy that we go, oh my God, we're watching a linebacker version of Kelvin Banks?
Trying to think of a good comparison to him from Texas's past. I feel like he's not Derek Johnson. Like, Derek Johnson would just erase space and make tackles. And he'd be like out of position at times, but he would just run the play down anyway. I don't know that Hill, I still have questions about him laterally going backwards. In terms of like old school traditional linebacker traits, oh my goodness, right? Elite. Like if the game were still like, hey, middle linebacker, nothing goes through the A gaps without your say so.
Yeah.
He would be outstanding. I feel like he could probably just convert to buck and play very quickly. I know that he could.
The boundary edge. I know when we use buck and jack, people get confused. It's the boundary edge. Weak side pass rusher. He's not the guy that's being asked to stop the running game or the power running game. He's coming off the edge and getting after the quarterback.
I feel very confident that he could do that and be good at it. I don't feel as confident yet that he can become a true sniff the play out inside linebacker. It may not matter. He's so toolsy that he could become probably pretty effective as a decent inside linebacker who adds amazing value add as a run blitzer and pass blitzer. I feel like that's kind of his floor right now at his current position. I don't know if he will become a amazing. I don't know if he'll become like McElroy, you know, or if he'll become like, Texas has a kind of a paucity of options to even think through here, but Jordan Hicks. Yeah.
There you go.
Manny Acho. I don't know if he's going to be quite that.
Keenan Robinson.
But he will be effective this year situationally, and he will be effective as a starter in some capacity. I feel pretty confident at some point.
Let me ask you, what percentage of his time would you want him blitzing from linebacker anywhere? And what percentage of his time do you want him just lining up on the edge and coming?
Well, if he's in like a third down package, then he could split a difference. And it doesn't really matter where he lines up because he's going to be coming more often than not. So then it becomes more of like a which offensive lineman do you want to pick on, right? And then that dictates where he lines up rather than anything on his part. I think he has that sort of versatility because he's so good at exploding through blocks that he could be a really dangerous pass rusher for multiple alignments. But if he was playing like a starting will for a game, then I would want the blitz quotient to be as high as I could get away with without the things I mentioned earlier coming into play, where teams start to pick on you and sniff it out.
Agreed. I think the thing that's bewitching about him, I think he could be very good coming off the edge. I like him with momentum before the snap or right as the snap is occurring, where he's standing in one spot and then he takes off running to somewhere else. In other words, you're having to deal with him on the move rather than just a static blitz up a gap. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And I think he can be really dangerous that way, because usually an offensive lineman, if he kind of gets a piece of your linebacker or safety who's blitzing inside, the guy's kind of negated. I don't think that's the case with Hill. I think he runs through sort of casual contact. And one observation I made with Bobby, and I kind of want to get your thoughts on this. It will relate to the defensive line when we talk about edge, but this is relevant for Hill and some of the linebackers. I feel like Texas got good pressure last year. In fact, we know Texas got good pressure last year, statistically, and just our eyes saw it. But they didn't get people on the ground, which we also saw statistically and also with our eyes. Part of the reason was because a lot of our pass rush was provided by bigger guys who couldn't finish the play on a more athletic quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Anthony Hill is a chaser. So I think he can make the play, but I also think he can chase down the play that Alfred Collins or Byron Murphy creates with their penetration. In other words, he may not have been the initial guy that got the pressure, but he will finish the play because he's a better, much better athlete than the quarterback across from him.
You know who is like that?
Do you see something like that? DeMarvian a little bit.
Yeah, DeMarvian was like that. Sergio Kendall.
For sure.
Awful lot of his 10 sacks in 2008 were Roy Miller or Brian Arakpo flushed the quarterback and then Kendall ran it down.
We remember Sergio Kendall coming off the edge and detonating the poor Texas Tech quarterback, right? But actually, most of his sacks, and here's a dirty secret, most sacks for most edges is not you coming off cleanly off the edge and you beat the tackle with a rip move and then you nail the quarterback from behind. Most sacks for most edges is a quarterback gets pressured in the pocket and then starts to flee and runs into a much better athlete who is properly holding the edge and runs him down.
Is this in college?
In college.
Because in college.
Happens in the NFL as well, but sometimes the NFL is the pure edge pressure.
Yeah, and because in the NFL, they have their quarterbacks go through 1, 2, 3, 4 progressions. And in college, they don't want to have anything to do with that.
And truthfully, in the NFL, if you're a quarterback who bails from a decent pocket, they'll just bench you. They don't have any time for you. In college, you encourage your quarterback to bail if he's a great athlete because he might make something happen.
Yeah.
But I feel like Hill is a chaser and a finisher and not just a disruptor.
So that's interesting because it'd be very easy to utilize him as an inside linebacker to just detonate guards, cross people up, and then actually free up his teammates to either find themselves breaking free from their guys or to find free lanes on like delayed paths.
He might be intriguing too, Ian, against a mobile quarterback as the late blitzing spy.
Uh-huh.
Who finishes the play. And by the way, that mobile quarterback is not more athletic than Anthony Hill. He's not gonna outrun an angle on Anthony Hill.
Maybe Jalen Milroe.
Maybe, but you know, if Bama thinks they're going to run Jalen Milroe for 230 yards and win that game, I hope they try.
I mean, I hope they don't. I feel like that's one of their best chances to win that game.
You know, maybe, but if you completely take away their passing game.
Yeah. They can't. They have to throw some.
It's hard to score even if you run the ball really well, because you could stop the run situationally. Typically, if you can't, well, then you deserve to lose. But yeah, I don't. We actually had an interesting question about that on the live stream today, and I don't see a team on the schedule that's just going to run over Texas if we put out our certain personnel packages that won't allow it. But hey, we'll see. Famous last words of a fool, right?
Yeah.
Hey, let's talk about another freshman. He's not quite getting the hype of Anthony Hill, but at least he's pleasantly surprised so far. His name's Leono Lefau, the young freshman from Hawaii.
I think there's a G in there, a silent G. Or no, a invisible G.
Lefau?
Leonga Lefau.
Oh, Leonga Lefau. Oh, yeah. I say Leona like a lion.
Apparently when there's a – well, go ahead. I'm going to mix up my Pacific Islander pronunciation.
Hey, you know what? You don't speak Polynesian.
You don't.
Shut up, Ian. All right. Leona, let's talk about Lefau. How about that? The Hawaiian guy. He's apparently been getting really nice reports, not only in the spring, and that's carried over to the fall. Apparently, this is the guy that you described much earlier about traits and being instinctive at linebacker counting for a lot. Not to say he's a bad athlete, because I don't think he's a bad athlete at all. I think he's a pretty good athlete. But he sounds like he's going to be a pure inside linebacker and a dude he's going to start for us eventually. What do you think?
Yeah. I think I wrote an entire article about him in the offseason.
Refresh me. I'm sure I read it.
And what stood out to me from watching his Hawaii games, well, a few things stood out to me. Hawaii teams are way more spready than I expected. I expected all those teams with all those thick Hawaiian kids to just be like lining up in the I formation or something. And they didn't. So that was interesting, but maybe less interesting to the listener. He is he's got a ways to go as a run defender, and was way above average and sophisticated as a pass defender
for a linebacker.
You don't find that very often.
I remember his high school highlights had a lot of interceptions, good drops on balls, PBUs, and then what I always look for in any high school player, he was a two-way player and a pretty good tight end.
Yeah. I don't actually remember. I don't think I looked for him on tight end. I probably missed out some on the eval for that. But he has good hands. He takes just excellent drops. He knows where to be. He knows how to read the quarterback. So much of linebacker is just in pass defenses. If you're really good at getting backwards initially, then it frees you up to read the quarterback and to read the routes and to be a force that the quarterback is a trouble seeing, especially like on a play action pass. The quarterback's probably reading the safeties, and the linebackers can just kind of slip in unawares and wreck havoc.
Sorry, go ahead, Ian. I apologize.
Well, just he's an amazing prospect for Mike linebacker for Texas. He can do some of the things Ford can do in coverage already.
One of the rules of the Tampa 2, or one of the secrets of the Tampa 2, is that a lot of the time it's cover 3, because you want your Mike linebacker to get huge drops and huge depth right at the snap. And one of the things they'll say when they teach that is, don't break without depth. Meaning, you're not going to be able to break on a ball and make a play on a pass if you're not sufficiently deep enough. The ball's going to go over your head. If you think you're going to read a ball and break on it just kind of standing where you are, you're not relevant to the play. But if you get depth really fast, to your point, Ian, then you can make a break on a ball. And you surprise quarterbacks, because if you're super fast, they're like, you're not supposed to be there. And a lot of quarterbacks are throwing on muscle memory and reflex. And that's whenever you see the really stupid interception where the quarterback just throws it directly to a linebacker or a safety standing in the middle of the field.
Like half
that was
interceptions.
Yes. that is a quarterback surprised that the guy is there. That guy's not supposed to be there in the quarterback's mind. So it's interesting. All right. We like his future this
Rocky
year.
Kalmus.
Sorry?
I said Rocky Kalmus.
Oh, no. Please. Why are you doing that, Ian? That's not nice. All right. We like LaFau. He'll play this year. Probably we don't want him to be a mainstay of this defense.
No. Next year, I'll probably have to be, but this year, no.
Yeah. Darian Gallette, very athletic, had an injury. He was more of an edge in high school, more of a kind of like just go make plays guy. I don't think we know what he's going to be, but according to Justin Wells, the athleticism is off the charts. So I think you put him in the hopper, you redshirt him, and you see what happens once he's fully recovered.
Yeah.
To Celia Kana, did you see any of his tape in high school?
Yeah.
I'm
calling it in my mind.
Here are my reservations about Tasili. I think he's a natural pass rusher. The two things that kind of struck me is he was an older player. He was a 19-year-old high school senior.
Yikes.
And you need to factor that in when you watch tape. That's important. The other thing is he's pretty skinny.
Yeah.
Didn't have a lot of body weight. Played around 200 pounds in high school. If he's gonna play edge at Texas, and I think even though he's listed at linebacker, I think the thought is to make him into more of an edge type guy, hybrid. I don't know. I don't know if he has pure linebacking skills, but he is definitely going to redshirt, and I think he's a longer-term project.
I think they want to use him because I think Eric reported recently that he was working at like Sam, Jack, Buck, Will, Mike, everything.
Yeah.
And it was because – not because they don't know what to do with him, but because they know exactly what to do with him. Rush the passer.
Yeah.
So they teach him different places from which to do it. So he's like he's very much a third down guy. If he's going to be a starter or in like the two deep outside of situational work down the line, it's going to be 3 or 4 years from now.
I agree. The tough thing is nurturing those guys and selling them on the patience of that they can be a guy and a contributor, but not now. Mm-hmm. And they're seeing their classmates, Anthony Hill, you know, out there on the field making plays. It's hard to keep that guy from going to Utah State or Utah or BYU where they can say, hey, you'll start here or you'll play more here. Samaje Burrell. Shorter, spread-busting sort of linebacker build. Moves well. The athleticism checks out. This is a guy who like does backflips and stuff. Good high school tape. I don't think he plays a role this year other than maybe special teams. Any thoughts on Mr. Burrell?
I really like him as a traditional off-ball Big 12 linebacker. They have him listed at 6'0", 220.
Yeah.
I don't know. I haven't seen him or heard if that's very accurate. I don't think it's like wildly inaccurate. He seems like the kind of guy that if Oklahoma State got him, you'd see him in like year two or three, and he'd be outstanding, super athletic, had learned the position, knew where to find the ball. How in the world did this guy end up at Oklahoma State?
He profiles to me as a more traditional off-ball linebacker with enough athleticism to not get exposed in the passing game.
Yeah. He also reminds me of some of the guys that Venables had at Clemson. Like, there was a guy they had when they like shut out Ohio State in the playoffs, whose name now escapes me. But this is going to bother me now. So I'm looking it up real quick. Kendall Joseph. Play like 6'2", 230. Lateral agility. teach them the position, let them have time to know how to find the ball. And they have that right blend. These smaller guys often have that right blend of power to play through blocks, but also speed and agility to run down the ball and hold up against the spread.
Yeah, you notice that even with Georgia. A lot of their linebackers are between 215, 230. You can weigh 240 and play linebacker at Georgia. Just they won't compromise on speed and quickness. So yeah. You better be a freaky 240. But they're happy to take a 215-pound guy who can run because they're so confident in their defensive line that they're going to keep the trash off you and you're not going to get bullied around.
Yeah, N'Kobe Dean was like that. I think N'Kobe Dean, the NFL wasn't totally sure what to do with him. Roquan Smith was like that a little bit as well. They kept him clean, and he did terrible things to teams.
Yeah, savage.
He was so good.
So linebacker, we look at this from a big picture perspective, 10,000 feet, and weirdly, we have one of the most important stalwarts of the entire defense as the featured guy in the middle. And then we kind of have some uncertainty. So it's funny when you read, say, someone doing like a pure unit ranking, like say Phil Steele likes to rank the units. Ooh. It's kind of weird to rank the Texas linebackers because in a sense, they have the best linebacker in the conference. But flanked by the super promising but limited freshman with amazing athletic burst. And then, you know, a former walk-on backup, a guy, David Benda. Benda, but don't break. Oh, God, that's going to catch on. who's kind of got a checkered history, not a ton of trust from Texas fans. We don't have great depth there. I think it's fair to say we're not going to become a 3-3-5 team anytime soon.
Not a temptation for this roster.
No. So how do you rate this linebacker group? Do you even rate them globally? Or do you just say, hey, it's Jalen Ford and some other guys that we're piecing together, and this is the approach because we love our secondary and we love our defensive front for the most part?
I think they'll end up being pretty good because I think you have, I mean, realistically, you have one proven star, like you said, in Jalen Ford.
Yep.
And probably the next two guys are limited ceiling but high floor people in Jett Bush and David Benda Don't Break. So I think that creates a pretty stable room. I don't know if anybody else is likely to have an impact on the season. Like, maybe Mo Blackwell, maybe Anthony Hill, but probably just situationally. And they have all these other guys, right? Burrell and Leonga Lafau that I think are going to be amazing players in the future, like future Jalen Fords, but not this season. So I don't know. It's a little hard. It would be a little hard to gauge them against, like, if you were ranking the best linebacker core in the Big 12, I think it would be a little bit tricky. But in terms of, like, will Texas have winning linebacker play this season? I feel like the odds are quite good. Because it's either I think they will have it always have at least one decent guy on the field. And then it's either you're betting on Jalen Ford staying healthy or Jalen Ford getting injured, but one of the upside guys hitting early on his upside. And I think between those two, you have a very high likelihood, right?
So that's your floor.
Yeah.
That scenario. What's the upside? What's the upside ceiling look like?
The upside ceiling is probably like Benda Don't Break is a little better than expected. Ford is great. And Hill is a destroyer of worlds as a package player.
And he's got 7.5 sacks, 13 tackles for loss.
And he's not even a starter. Yeah.
3 forced fumbles.
Yeah.
Knocks a quarterback out. That kind of guy.
Yeah.
I like it. I like it. Well, there's no play on words necessary, such as Benda don't break, that Ian's trying to market and put forth. I'm surprised you're not doing a Blackwell, like going back to the Blackwell or something. I'm not sure, going back to the well, play on words. I'm not sure, but here's a play on words you don't need. It's straightforward. It's right at you. It's the best mortgage guy in the state of Texas. His name's Gabe Winslow. You can reach him at 832-557-1095. Why should you call Gabe? Well, he's really smart. He's really ethical. And he's sophisticated enough that he can fashion a solution no matter your financial situation. Give Gabe a call. Find out why he's the best in the biz. And find out why dozens, nay, scores of people have written me very satisfied with the service they've gotten from Gabe. Find out why. 832-557-1095 or go to mortgagesbygabe.com. Ian, anything we need to do to put a bow on it? And you're forbidden from using any more plays on words. I'm going to give you the final words. Give me a brilliant outro that I will not interrupt.
Texas has really above average coverage ability in a lot of the linebackers, particularly Jalen Ford and David Benda. I think that that will come up in the overall use of the unit. And I think that really suits Pete Kwiatkowski's style, which is to try to do more with less in the pass rush and attack offenses a little bit, but ultimately play a Benda don't break.
I strictly forbade you from that, and now I'm going to cut this from the podcast. So no, we're not going to have an outro. The people will be denied. And so you think you got your joke in, but you hurt the listeners. You hurt the Texas football fan, Ian. And I want you to live with that. I want you to think about that. And I'm going to say goodbye to all of you. Ian, I can't thank you enough. Thanks for joining me. And this has been Everyone Gets a Trophy. Do you need a realtor in Central Texas? Of course you do. We all need a realtor in Central Texas, even those of us who live in Dallas or Houston or San Francisco or Denver, Colorado. You need to go to Central Texas anyway. And the reason is Laura Baker is a fantastic realtor. She's great at what she does. She's a member of the elite Andy Allen team for Keller Williams. You can reach her at 512-784-0505. Talk with Laura if you're thinking about putting your house on the market. This is a great time to get market comps. If you're looking to buy in the market, you need all the help you can get. Call Laura, and it's 512-784-0505.